shall amend it. Come, look now." He stepped up beside the silent sentinel on the dark edge, and Frodo followed. Sam hung back. He already felt insecure enough on this high, wet platform. Faramir and Frodo looked down. Far below them, they saw the white waters pour into a foaming bowl and then swirl darkly about a deep oval basin in the rocks, until they found their way out again through a narrow gate and flowed away, fuming and chattering, into calmer and more level reaches. The moonlight still slanted down to the fall's foot and gleamed on the ripples of the basin. Presently Frodo was aware of a small, dark thing on the near bank, but even as he looked at it, it dived and vanished just beyond the boil and bubble of the fall, cleaving the black water as neatly as an arrow or an edgewise stone. Faramir turned to the man at his side. "Now what would you say that is, Unborn? A squirrel or a kingfisher? Are there black kingfishers in the night pools of Mirkwood?"
"'Tis not a bird, whatever else it be," answered Unborn. "It has four limbs and dives manwise. A pretty mastery of the craft it shows, too. What is it at? Seeking a way up behind the curtain to our hidings? It seems we're discovered at last. I have my bow here, and I have posted other archers, nigh as good marksmen as myself, on either bank. We wait only for your command to shoot, Captain."
"Shall we shoot?" said Faramir, turning quickly to Frodo. Frodo didn't answer for a moment, then, "No," he said, "no, I beg you not to." If Sam had dared, he would have said, "Yes," quick and loud. He couldn't see, but he guessed well enough from their words what they were looking at. "You know, then, what this thing is?" said Faramir. "Come now, you have seen. Tell me why it should be spared. In all our words together you have not once spoken of your gangrel companion, and I let him be for the time. He could wait till he was caught and brought before us. I sent my keenest huntsman to seek him, but he slipped them, and they had no sight of him till now, save Unborn here, once at dusk yester evening. But now he's done worse trespass than only to go coney-snaring in the uplands. He has dared to come to Henneth Annwn, and his life is forfeit. I marvel at the creature, so secret and so sly as he is, to come sporting in the pool before our very window. Does he think that men sleep without watch all night? Why does he so?"
"There are two answers, I think," said Frodo. "For one thing, he knows little of men, and sly though he is, your refuge is so hidden that perhaps he does not know that men are concealed here. For another, I think he is allured here by a mastering desire stronger than his caution."
"He is lured here, then, you say?" said Faramir in a low voice. "Can he, does he then know of your burden?"
"Indeed, yes. He bore it himself for many years."
"He bore it?" said Faramir, breathing sharply in his wonder. "This matter winds itself ever in new riddles. Then he is pursuing it?"
"Maybe. It is precious to him. But I did not speak of that."
"What then does the creature seek?"
"Fish," said Frodo. "Look." They peered down at the dark pool. A little black head appeared at the far end of the basin, just out of the deep shadow of the rocks. There was a brief silver glint and a swirl of tiny ripples. It swam to the side, and then with marvellous agility a frog-like figure climbed out of the water and up the bank. At once it sat down and began to gnaw at the small silver thing that glittered as it turned. The last rays of the moon were now falling behind the stony wall at the pool's end. Faramir laughed softly. "Fish," he said. "It is a less perilous hunger, or maybe not. Fish from the pool of Henneth Annwn may cost him all he has to give."
"Now I have him at the arrow point," said Unborn. "Shall I not shoot, Captain, for coming unbidden to this place? Death is our law."
"Wait, Unborn," said Faramir. "This is a harder matter than it seems. What have you to say now, Frodo? Why should we spare?"
"The creature is wretched and hungry," said Frodo, "and unaware of his danger." And Gandalf, your Mithrandir, he would have bidden you not to slay him for that reason, and for others. He forbade the elves to do so. I don't know clearly why, and of what I guess I cannot speak openly out here. But this creature is in some way bound up with my errand. Until you found us and took us, he was my guide.
Your guide? Said Faramir. The matter becomes ever stranger. I would do much for you, Frodo, but this I cannot grant.
To let this sly wanderer go free, at his own will from here, to join you later if it please him, or to be caught by orcs and tell all he knows under threat of pain. He must be slain or taken. Slain, if he be not taken very swiftly. But how can this slippery thing of many guises be caught, save by a feathered shaft? Let me go down quietly to him, said Frodo. You may keep your bows bent, and shoot me at least if I fail. I shan't run away.
Go then and be swift, said Faramir. If he comes off alive, he should be your faithful servant for the rest of his unhappy days. Lead Frodo down to the bank, unborn, and go softly. The thing has a nose and ears. Give me your bow.
Unborn grunted and led the way down the winding stair to the landing, and then up the other stair, until at last they came to a narrow opening shrouded with thick bushes. Passing silently through, Frodo found himself on the top of the southern bank above the pool. It was now dark, and the falls were pale and grey, reflecting only the lingering moonlight of the western sky. He couldn't see Gollum. He went forward a short way, and Unborn came softly behind him.
"Go on," he breathed in Frodo's ear. "Have a care to your right. If you fall in the pool, then no one but your fishing friend can help you. And forget not that there are bowmen near at hand, though you may not see them."
Frodo crept forward, using his hands, Gollum-like, to feel his way and to steady himself. The rocks were for the most part flat and smooth, but slippery. He halted, listening. At first he could hear no sound but the unceasing rush of the fall behind him. Then presently he heard, not far ahead, a hissing murmur.
"Fish! Nice fish! White face has vanished, my precious, at last, yes. Now we can eat fish in peace. No, not in peace, precious, for precious is last year's lost. Dirty hobbits, nasty hobbits, gone and left us, Gollum, and precious is gone. Only poor Smeagol all alone. No, precious, nasty men, they'll take it, steal my precious. Thieves, we hates them. Fish, nice fish, makes us strong, makes eyes bright, fingers tight, yes. Throttle them, precious, throttle them all, yes, if we gets chances. Nice fish, nice fish."
So it went on, almost as unceasing as the waterfall, only interrupted by a faint noise of slavering and gurgling. Frodo shivered, listening with pity and disgust. He wished it would stop, and that he never need hear that voice again. Anborn was not far behind. He could creep back and ask him to get the huntsman to shoot. They would probably get close enough while Gollum was gorging and off his guard. Only one true shot, and Frodo would be rid of the miserable voice forever. But no, Gollum had a claim on him now. The servant has a claim on the master for service, even service in fear. They would have found it in the dead marshes but for Gollum. Frodo knew, too, somehow quite clearly, that Gandalf would not have wished it.
"Smeagol," he said softly.
"Fish, nice fish," said the voice.
"Smeagol," he said a little louder. The voice stopped. "Smeagol, master has come to look for you. Master is here. Come, Smeagol." There was no answer but a soft hiss, as of intaken breath.
"Come, Smeagol," said Frodo.
"We're in danger. Men will kill you if they find you here. Come quickly, if you wish to escape death. Come to master."
"No," said the voice. "Not nice master. leaves poor Smeagol and goes with new friends. Master can wait. Smeagol hasn't finished.
There's no time, said Frodo. Bring Fish with you. Come.
No, must finish, Fish.
Smeagol, said Frodo desperately, Precious will be angry. I shall take Precious, and I shall say, Make him swallow the bones and choke. Never taste fish again. Come, Precious is waiting. There was a sharp hiss. Presently, out of the darkness, Gollum came crawling on all fours, like an erring dog called to heel. He had a half-eaten fish in his mouth and another in his hand. He came close to Frodo, almost nose to nose, and sniffed at him. His pale eyes were shining. Then he took the fish out of his mouth and stood up.
Nice master, he whispered. Nice hobbit. Come back to poor Smeagol. Good Smeagol comes. Now let's go. Go quickly, yes, through the trees while the faces are dark. Yes, come, let's go.
Yes, we'll go soon, said Frodo, but not at once. I will go with you as I promised. I promise again, but not now. You are not safe yet. I will save you, but you must trust me.
We must trust Master, said Gollum doubtfully. Why? Why not go at once? Where is the other one, the cross, rude hobbit? Where is he?
Away up there, said Frodo, pointing to the waterfall. I'm not going without him. We must go back to him. His heart sank. This was too much like trickery. He didn't really fear that Faramir would allow Gollum to be killed, and he would probably make him prisoner and bind him. And certainly what Frodo did would seem a treachery to the poor, treacherous creature. It would probably be impossible ever to make him understand or believe that Frodo had saved his life in the only way he could. What else could he do? To keep faith, as near as might be, with both sides. Come, he said, or the Precious will be angry. We are going back now, up the stream. Go on, you go in front. Gollum crawled along close to the bank for a little way, snuffling and suspicious. Presently he stopped and raised his head.
Something's there, he said. Not a hobbit.
Suddenly he turned back. A green light was flickering in his bulging eyes.
Master, master, he hissed. Wicked, tricksy, false.
He spat and stretched out his long arms with white snapping fingers. At that moment the great black shape of Unborn loomed up behind him and came down on him. A large, strong hand took him in the nape of the neck and pinned him. He twisted round like lightning, all wet and slimy as he was, wriggling like an eel, biting and scratching like a cat. But two more men came up out of the shadows.
"Hold still," said one, "or we'll stick you as full of pins as a hedgehog. Hold still."
Gollum went limp and began to whine and weep. They tied him, none too gently. "Easy, easy," said Frodo. "He has no strength to match you. Don't hurt him if you can help it. He'll be quieter if you don't. Smeagol, they won't hurt you. I'll go with you, and you shall come to no harm. Not unless they kill me too. Trust master." Gollum turned and spat at him. The men picked him up, put a hood over his eyes, and carried him off. Frodo followed them, feeling very wretched. They went through the opening behind the bushes and back, down the stairs and passages into the cave. Two or three torches had been lit. Men were stirring. Sam was there, and he gave a queer look at the limp bundle that the men carried. "Got him?" he said to Frodo. "Yes. Well, no, I didn't get him. He came to me, because he trusted me at first, I'm afraid. I didn't want him tied up like this. I hope it will be all right, but I hate the whole business."
"So do I," said Sam. "And nothing will ever be all right where that piece of misery is."
A man came and beckoned to the hobbits, and took them to the recess at the back of the cave. Faramir was sitting there in his chair, and the lamp had been rekindled in its niche above his head. He signed to them to sit down on the stools beside him. "Bring wine for the guests," he said, "and bring the prisoner to me." The wine was brought, and then Unborn came carrying Gollum. He had removed the cover from Gollum's head and set him on his feet, standing behind him to support him.
Gollum blinked, hooding the malice of his eyes with the heavy, pale lids. A very miserable creature he looked, dripping and dank, smelling of fish. He still clutched one in his hand. His sparse locks were hanging like rank weed over his bony brows. His nose was snivelling.
"Lucius, Lucius," he said. "The cord hurts us. Yes, it does. It hurts us. And we've done nothing."
"Nothing?" said Faramir, looking at the wretched creature with a keen glance, but without any expression in his face either of anger or pity or wonder. "Nothing? Have you never done anything worthy of binding or of worse punishment? However, that is not for me to judge, happily. But tonight you have come where it is death to come. The fish of this pool are dearly bought." Gollum dropped the fish from his hand.
"Don't want fish," he said.
"The price is not set on the fish," said Faramir. "Only to come here and look on the pool bears the penalty of death. I've spared you so far at the prayer of Frodo here, who says that of him, at least, you have deserved some thanks. But you must also satisfy me. What is your name? Whence do you come? And whither do you go? What is your business?"
"We are lost, lost," said Gollum. "No name, no business, no precious, nothing, only empty, only hungry. Yes, we're hungry. A few little fishes, nasty, bony little fishes for a poor creature, and they say death. So wise they are, so just, so very just."
"Not very wise," said Faramir, "but just. Yes, perhaps, as just as our little wisdom allows. Unloose him, Frodo." Faramir took a small nail knife from his belt and handed it to Frodo. Gollum, misunderstanding the gesture, squealed and fell down. "Now, Smeagol," said Frodo, "you must trust me. I will not desert you. Answer truthfully, if you can. It will do you good, not harm." He cut the cords on Gollum's wrists and ankles and raised him to his feet. "Come hither," said Faramir. "Look at me. Do you know the name of this place? Have you been here before?" Slowly Gollum raised his eyes and looked unwillingly into Faramir's. All light went out of them, and they stared bleak and pale for a moment into the clear, unwavering eyes of the man of Gondor. There was a still silence. Then Gollum dropped his head and shrank down, until he was squatting on the floor, shivering.
"We doesn't know, and we doesn't want to know," he whimpered. "Never came here, never come again."
"There are locked doors and closed windows in your mind, and dark rooms behind them," said Faramir. "But in this I judge that you speak the truth. It is well for you. What oath will you swear never to return, and never to lead any living creature hither by word or sign?"
"Master knows," said Gollum with a sidelong glance at Frodo. "Yes, he knows. We will promise Master, if he saves us. We'll promise to it."
"Yes." He crawled to Frodo's feet.
"Save us, nice Master," he whined. "Smeagol promises to precious, promises faithfully. Never come again, never speak. No, never. No, precious, no."
"Are you satisfied?" said Faramir. "Yes," said Frodo. "At least you must either accept this promise or carry out your law. You'll get no more, but I promised that if he came to me, he should not be harmed, and I would not be proved faithless." Faramir sat for a moment in thought. "Very good," he said at last. "I surrender you to your master, to Frodo, son of Drogo. Let him declare what he will do with you."
"But, Lord Faramir," said Frodo, bowing, "you have not yet declared your will concerning the said Frodo, and until that is made known, he cannot shape his plans for himself or his companions. Your judgment was postponed until the morning, but that is now at hand."
"Then I will declare my doom," said Faramir. "As for you, Frodo, in so far as lies in me under higher authority, I declare you free in the realm of Gondor, to the furthest of its ancient bounds, save only that neither you
nor any that go with you, have leave to come to this